you. Please be seated.
The court is ready to hear argument from Relator in In Re America.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Jay Rutherford with Jackson Walker, and I represent American Homestar of Lancaster and Nationwide Housing System. American Homestar of Lancaster manufactured a manufactured home that was sold by Nationwide Housing System to James and Clara Van Blarkum. As part of this transaction, the Van Blarkums executed an arbitration agreement covering certain claims and disputes that might arise. After the transaction occurred, the Van Blarkums filed suit in county court at law in Nueces County in Corpus Christi, Texas. At that time, I filed a motion to compel arbitration, and a hearing was had on this motion to compel arbitration, in which it was undisputed that there was an arbitration agreement, and it was undisputed that this dispute was covered by the arbitration agreement. Therefore, the judge did the only thing she could, based on the strong policy in the state of Texas and the strong federal policy in favor of arbitration, where there is an arbitration agreement and it does cover the dispute, she ordered us to binding arbitration. After she ordered us to binding arbitration, the Van Blarkum sought a writ of mandamus to the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals. The Corpus Christi Court of Appeals held that notwithstanding the very strong policy in favor of binding arbitration, that the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act prohibited binding arbitration in a dispute like the one we have before us when consumers have been issued a warranty. In this particular case, the issue before this court is whether or not the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals had jurisdiction to issue the writ of mandamus, and more importantly, whether or not the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act prohibits and overrides the Federal Arbitration Act. In light of the strong policy in favor.
Excuse me, you said that firstly, did the Court of Appeals have jurisdiction?
Yes, Your Honor.
Or did it abuse its discretion?
And did it abuse its discretion, Your Honor?
What's the basis of the jurisdiction question?
On the jurisdiction, Your Honor, in the United States Supreme Court in Greentree versus Randolph in December of 2000, specifically had before it an issue of what do you do under the Federal Arbitration Act whenever there's an order compelling or an order denying arbitration. The United States Supreme Court in that opinion specifically said that mandamus is appropriate and appeal is appropriate for an order compelling or denying arbitration under the Federal Arbitration Act.
I misunderstood. You used both mandamus and appeal.
Well, I didn't. It did say appeal is appropriate. The reason I interchanged those two is because under Texas law, Texas courts in Freeze versus Canales, for example, have always said the reason there's a right to mandamus under the Federal Arbitration Act is because the Federal Arbitration Act has in place a mechanism for interlocutory appeals. And since the Federal Arbitration Act has a mechanism for interlocutory appeals, we're going to hold that mandamus is the appropriate relief in the state of Texas. All of that is based on the fact that there is this interlocutory appeal of orders compelling or denying arbitration. Now, Randolph, the Greentree and Randolph case specifically had a footnote that said when there is not an order dismissing of all claims and the case is just stayed pending binding arbitration, which is exactly what happened in this case, that is not an interlocutory order that's final that can be appealed. So if that order in the federal court system cannot be appealed, then the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals did not have jurisdiction to order mandamus because Freeze versus Canales needs to be revisited in light of the Supreme Court's holding. Now, notwithstanding the jurisdictional issues here, the important question...
Sorry, I misunderstood. You said that if the trial court merely stays the cause of action and orders the arbitration, that is not a final judgment and therefore is not subject to appeal under the federal statute.
According to Greentree, that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. In which event, then, our court would not permit you arguably a mandamus?
That's correct, Your Honor. At that point in time, what would happen, there would be binding arbitration after the... There would be an arbitration after the arbitration. You would go to court, and seek some type of final judgment affirming the arbitration, and at that point in time, appeal would be the appropriate remedy. Notwithstanding the jurisdictional aspect of this, the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals also addressed whether the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act overrides the Federal Arbitration Act. To determine whether a congressional mandate has been overridden, it's a very difficult standard that must be overcome, and the burden is on the party resisting the standard, on the party resisting arbitration.
Help me here real quick. I'm going to diverge just a minute. Conceptually, is arbitration an alternative form of dispute resolution? I mean, in Texas, we sort of consider arbitration an alternative form of dispute resolution. Would you agree with that? By statute, it is.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Then why is it not an informal dispute settlement mechanism?
Because of the definition of informal dispute settlement mechanism.
Okay, and where is that definition?
The definition is in the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. The Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act specifically defines a mechanism as procedures set forth by the Federal Trade Commission. So the definition of mechanism is specifically defined by the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act.
And what has the Trade Commission set up?
The Federal Trade Commission, in its regulations, has set forth certain things and certain guidelines for whether or not a mechanism that can be included in a written warranty, not an agreement.
All right, so are you saying then it's up to the FTC to decide what is an informal settlement mechanism? In other words, if they develop internal rules for arbitration, then they have decided that's an informal settlement mechanism, and they, by their decision, have determined what Congress meant by that term?
Your Honor, if I can clarify, I think the difference is in a warranty, the informal settlement dispute mechanism mentioned by the Magnuson-Moss can be specifically included in a warranty, and that warranty does not have to be agreed upon. It can be something that the manufacturer or the retailer can unilaterally impose. So this is the way we're going to do it. Congress has said that the mechanism is going to be defined, and the Federal Trade Commission, which oversees warranties that unilaterally can be issued, then we're going to let them set up these guidelines and what these things
I understand. You're saying that term, informal dispute settlement mechanism, includes situations, like you say, where it can be imposed and regulated by the FTC. But why does that not also include arbitration?
Because, Your Honor, nowhere does it specifically mention. The only definition where the Federal Trade Commission has ever mentioned what is included in a mechanism is in commentary to the regulation, where the Federal Trade Commission has said, we think that this mechanism includes binding arbitration. So the Federal Trade Commission, in comments, not in regulations,
but Congress did not assign to the FTC the ability to define what that term means. Where in the statutory language does it say that informal dispute settlement mechanism does not include binding arbitration?
Well, Your Honor, that's our point, is that nowhere within the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, at any point, anywhere in the statute, does it say you cannot have binding arbitration.
I guess what I'm saying is the premise of your argument is that those are two different things.
That's correct.
But if we were to decide that they are the same thing, that this term, informal dispute settlement mechanism, includes or could include arbitration, but that is an informal dispute resolution mechanism, then wouldn't the CA's position be right?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe it would be right, because before you can override a federal statute, the Federal Arbitration Act, you have to look at the legislative history and the legislative intent of the Federal Arbitration Act and the Magnuson-Moss Act to see if, number one, if the Magnuson-Moss Act specifically trumps it, or number two, if they're irreconcilable. And as we pointed out, and as Mr. Powell will speak further on, there is no...
But I guess what I'm focusing on is how much deference we should give to the FTC's interpretation of this term. Congress gave to the FTC the ability to apply this term, right? But not to define it. Is there any indication in the legislative history that this term includes binding arbitration? Because if it does, then by giving the FTC the power to interpret it, the FTC's conclusion, as referenced in its rules, would bind us. But otherwise, it doesn't. Isn't that correct?
Well, Your Honor, I think that is only partially correct, because I do believe that the informal dispute settlement mechanisms, if I'm following your question correctly, if the Federal Trade Commission and this court says the former dispute settlement mechanisms and binding arbitration are the same thing.
No, no. Congress said that because the FTC doesn't have the power to say that unless Congress gave them the power to say that.
Your Honor, I think that's what's required. I think Congress would have to specifically say in the Magnuson Moss Warranty Act that we're not going to allow binding arbitration. We're not going to allow it whenever we've got a warranty that can unilaterally be issued. Now, for the court's reference, the only court that I've been able to find which specifically addresses your issue is an informal dispute settlement mechanism and binding arbitration, the same thing. The Third Circuit, in a case called Harrison, said, no, informal dispute settlement mechanism.
Well, it seems like in McMahon as well they say it, because the Supreme Court said that that by agreeing to arbitrate a statutory claim, a party does not forego the substantive rights afforded by the statute. It only submits to the resolution in an arbitral rather than a judicial form. So the Supreme Court seems to take arbitration out of the settlement mechanism box and put it into more of a judicial resolution box.
I believe that's correct.
But my question goes to, how much deference do we have to give the FTC?
Well, you do have to give the FTC's interpretation some deference, but there's a limit on the deference that you give them. The United States Supreme Court in EEOC versus Arabian American Oil Company specifically said you do look to the regulations, but you don't give them complete, unlimited control to do whatever they want to. If they've done something that specifically violates a statute, for example here, where they say you can't have binding arbitration, which directly conflicts with the Federal Arbitration Act, then that's too far.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Powell, let me pick up right where we stopped, if
I
that's
will.
All right. If you would, trying to get the perspective of what kind of deference we have to give to the FTC's regulation. I mean, is it your position that the statute is not clear or is clear on what informal settlement dispute resolution means, and therefore what kind of authority the FTC was given in order to promulgate regulations relating to those mechanisms?
Our position is this statute is unambiguous, that the plain language of Section 2310(2), which is the statute that says informal dispute settlement procedure, which is incorporated into the terms of the written warrant, that's the term we're dealing with. We believe that that is a clear, unambiguous, it is plain language about what the congressional intent is. We don't need to look to the FTC.
Okay, what does that mean, and what is the congressional intent?
The burden of showing the congressional intent is upon those who would oppose arbitration.
Well, I understand, but I'm asking you to help us understand how to get where you want us to go, and your position is that it's unambiguous, and therefore I would take your position to mean that the FTC's interpretation of the statute is not permissible to the extent it has promulgated rules prohibiting binding arbitration.
That's correct, because of two things, I think, in the plain language. First of all, it says an informal settlement or dispute settlement procedure. I say to you that arbitration is not an informal procedure. You don't find it called informal. Congress knew how to describe arbitration. It did so very eloquently in the Federal Arbitration Act, Title IX. It did not describe it as informal, so far as I can find. Informal refers in contrast to the kind of thing that the FTC would allow, which would be a warrantor developing a procedure for resolution kind of in-house or with a third party is warranty claim. That's not what we're dealing with here. Arbitration is a much more formal procedure. After all, federal courts order it, they police it, they look at the verdict or look at the award, they can set the award aside.
Then is it your position that the FTC's interpretation of the statute is not permissible to the extent that it prohibits any kind of binding arbitration or can be interpreted to do that?
Yes. That is beyond the Federal Trade Commission's jurisdiction because of that limiting language in the statute. And I want to take this one step further.
So therefore it's not entitled to any deference.
I'm sorry?
Therefore it's not entitled to any deference.
That
is
correct.
Do we have any in Texas if an administrative agency makes a ruling that seems to conflict with the statute and the legislature sits there for a quarter of a century, we find that instructive. There's a similar doctrine with regard to Congress.
I believe that this court looks to your the way you construe things in the Fleming case. You look at if there's the plain language, then you don't need the legislative history.
But how long have these regulations been in place?
The regulations have been in place since the Act was passed.
And we've never had Congress come back and pass any kind of an act in any way to say to the FTC, you're out of line.
That's correct. The Act has not been amended, so there is no legislative acceptance doctrine allowed. If I could complete an answer to your previous
Please.
Question, the second part of the language is very important. It says, which is incorporated into the terms of the written warranty. In this case, there was a standalone arbitration agreement. Congress chose those words. It's not a subterfuge to use a standalone.
What would be the reason for making that kind of distinction?
I'm sorry?
Give me a reason for making that kind of distinction.
For Congress to?
Yes. Why would they care if it's in a separate agreement or within the written warranty agreement itself?
Because the Magnuson-Moss Act dealt with disclosures about the content of warranty. And that was all Congress was telling the Federal Trade Commission you can deal with is the content of warranties. If it ain't in there, you don't deal with it. So there's a very substantive reason. Magnuson-Moss is a very confined act, despite the fact that it kind of spreads legs out into other areas. And it deals with disclosures about warranties and content of warranties, notably express warranties. So it would be very logical for Congress to limit the power of the Federal Trade Commission to deal with these issues by dealing with the content of the warranty. And Congress chose those words. I mean, Congress could have said a procedure with regard to a written warranty, or it could have said a procedure that would seek to resolve a claim under a written warranty. It chose not to. In fact, it didn't need to use the limiting language at all. But it chose that limiting language.
Any other questions? Thank you, Tom. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondent.
May it please the court, Mr. Scott Smith and Ms. Leslie Rice Melman, the argument for respondent. Mr. Smith will open with the first 15 minutes.
May it please the court, I'm Scott Smith, representing James and Clara Van Blarkum, who are the real parties in interest. As has been pointed out in the briefs in this case, this is an issue of first impression in Texas. The issue for this court is certainly not whether arbitration has been favored in recent jurisprudence. Of course it has. The issue is also not whether statutory rights are generally arbitrable. Of course they are. The issue before this court concerns whether a binding arbitration agreement entered into by the consumer at the time he receives a written warranty on an item of personal property is enforceable under a particular federal statute, namely the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act.
Would you go so far as to agree that merely by providing a judicial remedy, merely a federal statute does not preclude arbitration?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the mere fact that this statute says you can sue doesn't mean that they meant to trump the federal act, arbitration.
The mere fact that any statute says that does not necessarily preclude arbitration, but when you look,
so we need to look for more than that.
Right. When you look at the specific text combined with the legislative history and what the FTC, as the congressionally mandated agency to interpret this act, has said, what other federal courts have said, I think it's overwhelming.
Is it critical, Mr. Smith, is it critical to your argument that arbitration, we conclude that arbitration is an informal settlement mechanism?
Arbitration is certainly an informal settlement mechanism.
What would then be a formal settlement mechanism?
Your Honor, I think a formal settlement mechanism would be where the rules of procedure and the rules of evidence are in place and abided by?
Would a settlement mechanism be something that the federal government could create by way of a statute that sets up a procedure for resolving a dispute outside going to court?
Well, I think that what the federal government has done, what the United States Congress has done, is to mandate that the Federal Trade Commission decide what the requirements.
Now, my question is, could a formal proceeding be one where the federal government sets up a statute setting forth procedures for settling or resolving disputes outside the court system?
I would say that's a possibility, but I don't know that the federal government has done that.
Don't the words informal and settlement connote a non-binding mechanism?
Well, I think that's one thing that they may connote, but I think the term is much broader than that.
What authority do you have that the words informal and settlement mechanisms can encompass a binding arbitration?
Or
any other binding settlement?
Well, I don't think that any informal settlement mechanism under this statute encompasses anything that's binding. However, I do believe that what the FTC has said in its rules concerning...
Let's focus on the statute.
Okay.
So you agree the informal dispute settlement mechanism under the statute was intended to be a non-binding mechanism.
That's right.
Well, but how does that dovetail with your conflict argument that the FAA then conflicts? By definition, there would be no conflict, right?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
Well, if binding arbitration is not an informal dispute settlement mechanism, then Congress did not delegate to the FTC to promulgate rules regarding it, and therefore the FTC's interpretation should be afforded no deference.
No, I think that arbitration, whether it is binding or non-binding, is generally informal. Every arbitration proceeding I've ever been involved in is very informal. Rules of evidence, rules of procedure don't apply.
But binding arbitration is not a settlement procedure. It's an adjudicative procedure. I mean, you wouldn't refer to a lawsuit as a settlement mechanism. Many times it results in a settlement, but it's supposed to be an adjudicative.
It is
non-binding arbitration may be for settlement, because you get to the end, you say, well, I don't know, maybe so, maybe not, maybe we should give in.
But that's the interjection of another word, Justice.
No, settlement, isn't it?
Informal dispute resolution.
No, it's an informal dispute settlement mechanism.
Right, informal dispute settlement procedure or mechanism.
If it said resolution, it would be much harder, it seems.
But what you were talking about is adjudicative. That's precisely the point of this statute, is that the consumer, at the time he is given a written warranty, at the time he enters into a purchase and is given a written warranty, according to this statute, the consumer cannot waive at that point his right to a trial by jury.
Where does it say that?
Well, binding arbitration is not specifically mentioned in the statute.
Wouldn't it be consistent with the statute for Congress to say, well, you can have an informal dispute settlement mechanism that the warranty holder can go through, and at the end of the day, if that's not resolved, then the warranty holder is free to choose form selection. They can go to court, or they can choose an arbitration, binding arbitration form. Isn't really, under the case law and under the law construing arbitration act, really it's a form choice and not a remedy choice?
Well, it usually is certainly a form choice. According to this statute, what we have is that the only thing that stands between the consumer and the courts is a mechanism. We're told that it is an informal. It is an informal.
But what's inconsistent
mechanism
about letting them? The statute doesn't say you can't have both. You can have an informal dispute settlement mechanism in the warranty, and if that doesn't resolve the dispute, then the warranty holder can decide, well, do I go to court or can I voluntarily choose to choose my form as an arbitration form because I don't want to spend the money to go to court. I would rather get this over with quickly, cheaply, and I'd rather submit it to arbitration. Why can't the where does the Act prohibit that from happening?
The Act zeroes in on the point where the consumer receives the warranty at the time of purchase. Let me clarify.
If the consumer says, when I get the purchase, I think this is a good plan. Let's try to, if something's wrong with this product at the time I'm buying it, so, well, that's right, if something's wrong with this mobile home, I'm going to go through this informal dispute settlement mechanism. And if the seller doesn't satisfy me, then rather than go to court, I'd rather go to arbitration. And you can make that decision.
The consumer can do that under this Act, but he just can't do it at the time of purchase.
Why not?
Because...
I don't find that language in the text of the Act. You conceded to Judge Heck that simply giving a right to sue doesn't get you there. And I don't see how providing for, in addition to form selection, i.e. versus arbitration, providing an informal settlement mechanism cuts you out of arbitration.
Well, at the time the consumer is given his warranty, if the warrantor has an informal dispute settlement mechanism in place, then the statute says that the consumer must initially resort to that. After which means that it's non-binding, if after which he can go to the court system and litigate.
The point is
that at no time prior to the time the consumer accepts delivery of the product, can he sign away his right to a trial?
Now, you can have a warranty without an informal dispute settlement mechanism.
Yes, you can.
The statute doesn't require that.
That's correct.
Now, how is it that the statute says, well, you can have one or you don't, but either way, you can't arbitrate? That's the disconnect I have.
Well, what the statute is saying, basically, is that it has to be that any mechanism, Your Honor, has to be non-binding. And the reason it's non-binding is that if the consumer must initially resort to that mechanism, if there is one, before he goes to court, before he litigates, then that means, by definition, the mechanism is non-binding. The FTC has held that for 25 years.
I'm having difficulty here saying, if you don't have to have the mechanism,
you don't have to have the mechanism.
Congress says, well, if you don't have the mechanism, then you don't have the right to arbitrate. You have to go directly to court.
But the point is that arbitration is a mechanism, and binding arbitration is a mechanism.
But you said it's not an informal dispute settlement mechanism.
Well, binding arbitration is not according to this statute, because it binds you to the result.
But the statute doesn't say you can only have these. It just says if you do, FTC, if you have an informal settlement mechanism, which is not arbitration, then the FTC sets up the rules. But you don't have to have
Right.
Rules.
I want to emphasize that the FTC has spoken, and we have Ms. Melman here from the FTC to field your questions in this regard. The FTC has been very emphatic in saying that a binding mechanism cannot be mandated. The consumer does not have to be made to commit to a binding mechanism at the time he enters into the transaction. What a consumer can do after he has received his warranty and a dispute arises, if the consumer at that point in time wants to sign an arbitration agreement, that, according to the FTC regulations and according to the statute, is fine. It's just at the time the consumer is given the written warranty, he cannot sign away his right to a trial by jury or a court trial.
But you agree, Mr. Smith, that if this court determines that arbitration is not an informal settlement mechanism, then your clients lose.
Your Honor, I really I really can't say that because 2310 of the statute clearly says that the consumer's remedy is to be carefully structured. There are certain restrictions. Number one, if the warrantor has provided for it, then the consumer must resort to that. If the warrantor has not provided for that, then the consumer can proceed directly to trial. The point is that at the time the warranty is given to the consumer cannot commit to binding arbitration.
You have a second argument. By implication under the Act, there may be a prohibition against binding arbitration. But at least as to your argument that the FTC's rule, due deference from this court, that prohibits binding arbitration would be lost.
The rule of the FTC, which I would like an opportunity to talk about here, that rule, those rules concerning informal dispute settlement mechanisms and concerning this statute are to be given controlling weight, since this agency is the one who has been mandated by Congress to interpret and to enforce the Act.
Here's the problem, though. You say, you have to say this, the Act encourages warrantors to use informal dispute settlement mechanisms. And you say, well, that can't be binding arbitration. And you have to argue that, because otherwise you'd be faced with a statute
that
encouraged warrantors to use binding arbitration.
Right.
So you say it's not in there.
That's right.
The Act then gives the FTC rulemaking authority on what informal dispute settlement mechanisms are.
Correct.
It can't include, that rulemaking authority can't include binding arbitration if the same words in the statute don't.
Well, that's exactly right.
Well, then how does the FTC have any rulemaking authority, have any basis for deciding that informal dispute settlement mechanisms do or don't include binding arbitration and do or should or shouldn't be used? They just
because
don't have any authority.
Binding arbitration is a binding mechanism. It's a binding mechanism.
So the FTC has no rulemaking authority over that?
No, the FTC has rulemaking authority, but the FTC is interpreting this statute in accordance with the textual language and the legislative history.
So the FTC's rulemaking power goes way beyond just saying what a binding informal dispute resolution mechanism is.
The statute uses the term initially. The consumer must initially resort to the mechanism, after which he may proceed to trial if he's not satisfied with the result of the mechanism. That means, by definition, the mechanism is non-binding on the consumer.
Statute,
and the
FTC. The statute only gives the FTC power to make rules in three areas. And following up on Judge Heck's question, which area is this? What the written warranty's got to say, it doesn't seem to be that. Or the pre-sale disclosure of warranty information. Or minimum federal requirements for informal dispute settlement mechanisms. Which area is this rule that prohibits binding arbitration? Which does it fall into?
Your Honor, I see that my green light's on.
We have
the FTC here.
All right, I'll defer to her on that question.
Okay.
Let me ask you one question.
Sure.
Which is, isn't the Gilmer case in the Age Discrimination Act instructive on this?
I don't
The EEOC had to go to an informal dispute mechanism. And they had to do that on behalf of the aggrieved employee, but if that failed, the employee could have already agreed on binding arbitration.
In the Gilmer case, there was no issue raised by the claimant that concerning the text or the legislative history. In this particular case, we are talking about the text and the legislative history. Furthermore, in Gilmer, you're talking about something that where a dispute has arisen. In Magus and Moss, you're talking about what the consumer can commit to prior to a dispute having arisen. Those are.
Was there any other? Is there any other statute where the or area in the last 25 years where the United States Supreme Court has ever ruled against going to arbitration?
I'm not aware of one, Your Honor.
I mean, in every case we see, arbitration wins.
That's right. That's right. I'm not aware of one, but I do know that the federal every federal court that has looked at this, and I'm thinking of the Waverly and Boyd court out of the Middle District of Alabama. I'm thinking about the 11th Circuit that affirmed Waverly. I'm thinking of the Raceley versus Grand Homes out of the Southern District of Mississippi. I'm thinking of the Pitchford case, which I just filed this morning, copies for the court out of the Western District of Virginia. All of these courts have held binding arbitration agreements signed at the time of purchase are unenforceable under Magnus and Moss. And incidentally, all of those cases include mobile homes. It seems that all of these cases include mobile homes. If I may defer
questions?
Now to...
Thank you very much.
May it please the Court, on behalf of the Commission's General Counsel, I'd like to thank the Court for allowing Federal Trade Commission some time this morning.
Let me ask you real quickly, if, as I believe your co-counsel just conceded, binding arbitration is not included within the term informal dispute settlement mechanism, where does the FTC get authority to opine anything regarding binding arbitration?
The Commission's position on what informal means is that Congress was talking broadly about non-judicial dispute resolution, and indeed, the Mitsubishi case refers quite clearly to arbitration.
Well, then let me just say, you disagree with your co-counsel then that binding arbitration takes it out of this term. I understood your co-counsel, Mr. Smith, to say, not your co-counsel, but I understood Mr. Smith to say that if it's binding arbitration, it is not an informal dispute settlement mechanism. You disagree with that?
I disagree with him in part. The way the Commission views the provision that we have before us, Section 110, is that Congress intended to encourage non-judicial dispute resolution, but non-judicial dispute resolution that would proceed along certain parameters. Those are set out in the statute and amplified by the Federal Trade
Commission. It doesn't say dispute resolution. It says settlement mechanism. And isn't that a significant difference? Because binding arbitration is not a settlement mechanism. Would you agree?
Looking at the legislative history, unfortunately, Congress did not define what it meant here, but looking at the legislative history, there were two things that were considered by Congress, and this comes out most clearly in the House report. On the one hand, we have litigation, and on the other hand, we have mechanisms, whatever we may call them, that are entered into between the warrantor and the consumer for resolving the dispute in some fashion that would keep it out of court.
In the legislative history, does it ever mention arbitration?
That's correct, Your Honor.
No, I said, does it ever mention?
Does it ever mention arbitration? It doesn't mention it specifically, but in the House report, it says, quote, quite clearly, an adverse decision in any informal dispute settlement proceeding would not be a bar to a civil action on the warranty involved in the proceeding. But the decision reached in any informal dispute settlement procedure relating to any matter considered in such proceeding would be admissible in any civil action.
I guess my point is that there is no evidence that Congress contemplated arbitration.
Congress did not specifically discuss arbitration in the legislative history. We could find no specific reference to arbitration. However, looking at the statutory scheme, I don't think the two are compatible at all. We have...
Well, under McCone, you've got to look at the statute first, and then the legislative history, and now we're down to the policy. You agree that the statute doesn't touch on arbitration. Legislative history doesn't touch on arbitration. So under the McCone test, you're stuck with
policy. We're looking at the scheme of the statute.
Okay.
The overall legislative scheme is that this is all voluntary. If there's a warranty offered, that is completely voluntary. There is non-judicial dispute resolution that will proceed along certain parameters. It strikes me as simply ludicrous to think that a warrantor could sidestep this whole procedure, which Congress wanted to encourage, simply by having a one or two paragraph binding arbitration clause on a piece of paper.
Why is that any harder to imagine in this context than it is in an age discrimination context?
Congress was specifically concerned here with the fact that in warranties there was no true bargaining power as between the vendor, manufacturer, and consumers. There is no such legislative history as to employees. So Congress here had something very specific in mind. This is a very narrowly focused statute on that particular point in time. Getting back to a question that was raised earlier.
Why didn't they just say no arbitration, but if you want to offer informal dispute settlement mechanisms, you can do that if you want to?
Congress, unfortunately, doesn't always speak with such clarity. Clearly, we would not be here today, Your Honor, if Congress had said that. But Congress frequently does not bring all these loose ends together. However, it is clear that, number one, it directed the FTC to flesh out the broad parameters here.
But it directs you to make rules about informal dispute settlement mechanisms. Where do you get the authority to go further and say, and in addition, we're taking away your power to arbitrate under the Federal Arbitration Act?
It is our position that by informal, that Congress had in mind, and this comes in several places in the legislative history, Congress had in mind, although it did not define its terms, as non-judicial proceedings. It was broadly as to non-judicial proceedings. The Commission's interpretation of this is that Congress intended to preclude binding arbitration, and that is clear, and I submit, Your Honor, with all due respect, that is even though minds may differ, that is a reasonable interpretation of the statute. The Commission has addressed this two times. In 1975, it conducted formal notice and comment rulemaking proceedings. It conducted public hearings in four cities across the country. It issued a rule. It was subject to judicial review. There was no petition for review.
But the rule itself doesn't say you can't have arbitration. That's just the spin that you have put on it. Nowhere in your rule does it say, and after you get through with this informal dispute resolution mechanism, you've got to go to court. You can't then subject yourself to arbitration. The rules don't.
The rule clearly permits, at the end of the day, if the parties agree.
But why,
that
the rule doesn't
go into binding arbitration. I'll read from the statement.
No, but where does the rule say that ahead of time, the rule doesn't say you can't arbitrate, you can never, ever have an arbitration clause ahead of time. The rule simply says this will be the quote, informal mechanism, and the informal mechanism will be non-binding. It doesn't go further and say, and further we prohibit arbitration clauses if you don't have an informal mechanism.
It's correct, Your Honor. The rule doesn't say it can't be ahead of time.
What's
it, could,
the history
it could be ahead
on that,
of time.
On the, you had this hearing in 1975 and then another one in
1999. Another one, Your Honor.
Was there a formal protest or a request to reconsider?
There was participation by a representative, a trade association of the mobile home industry. They did ask the court, ask the commission to reconsider Rule 703. The commission solicited public comments again. It reconsidered 703, looked at the legislative history again. It, as reflected in the notice of final action in the Federal Register, it had before it the very careful analysis in the Wilson v. the Waverly.
All I really want to know was that was that was initiated by somebody, and it was.
No, that was actually initiated by the commission. The commission has a regulatory review program under which it periodically reviews regulations that have been on the books for a period of time to evaluate their regulatory impact, and it was pursuant to that internal
and
policy.
That's not judicially reviewable, I take it.
It would be, it was viewed as final action.
Since there was no change, was it?
It would have been reviewable as under the Administrative Procedure Act, under the arbitrary and capricious standards of the Administrative Procedure Act. Getting back to the question, if I may, I'm out of time, but
I have a question. What is your answer to their alternate argument? Well, be that as it may, if there's no binding arbitration of written warranties, that act can't include implied warranties, DTPA claims, or other common law claims.
And it was pursuant to that internal
policy. And that's not judicially reviewable, I take it.
It would be, it was viewed as final action.
Since there was no change.
It would have been reviewable as under the Administrative Procedure Act, under the arbitrary and capricious standards of the Administrative Procedure Act. Getting back to the question, if I may, I'm out of time, but
I have a question. What is your answer to their alternate argument? Well, be that as it may, if there's no binding arbitration of written warranties, that act can't include implied warranties, DTPA claims, or other common law claims.